Hello everyone, I'm Mimi from Agora Digital Art, and today I'm pleased to talk with American artist Leah Rowe for the launch of her residency project X-Pop, a VR museum that you can visit in Hubs Mozilla. Leah, welcome.
Thank you so much, Mimi, for allowing me to be on this podcast and be interviewed.
I'm really excited to have you today to discuss your very personal project X-Pop. Before we jump into the topic, let me introduce you. So, Leah Rowe, you are a Korean-American 3D artist born in LA and living in Brooklyn. You are also an educator who teaches experiential art at Pratt Institute New Media and 3D design at NYU Integrated Design Media Program. You grew up in LA and you were highly influenced by the movie industry. The Walk of Fame was your daily promenade trail with your friends. So it comes to no surprise that you have a huge interest in films. You are here to present your residency project X-Pop, an ironic museum about the missing AAPI, Asian American Pacific Islander American community representation in films. And by Asian, we mean Eastern Asians for the Americans and Orientals for the people in the UK. What was the catalyst to start this gamified museum in Hubs Mozilla? And what is your intention with this celebration museum?
So thank you for the introduction. I think definitely my upbringing growing up in a predominantly white neighborhood and attending school directly in Hollywood, that definitely had a lot of other students coming from, you know, families that are very big in the Hollywood industry. And I think having just grown up watching so many of these films, talking about films, you know, I studied film for my undergraduate degree because that's really just the culture that I was overwhelmed with growing up in Los Angeles. And because of that, I felt just this tension of me wanting to be so part of this community because that was really what I knew, but knowing that I didn't really see myself anywhere a part of this community because most of my friends growing up were all white women, and seeing how, I just remember there were one semi-formal event that we had at our school and our after party for our prom, and both of them were themed, you know, dress up. If you were part of a couple, dress up as your favorite Hollywood couple, or they were always based on, you know, dressing up as a celebrity who I really didn't have that many to choose from. So they were always, or the, you know, Asian students that did attend my program, we all were kind of maybe limited to either Lucy Liu and Charlie's Angels, and that was essentially it. So a lot of my just childhood leading up to recently within the pandemic, how a lot of this wrongful misrepresentation and just otherizing other cultures that we would see in media as, you know, immigrants or not really, quote, assimilated to American culture because of accents, cultural differences, and just the ways that, in my experience, Asians were represented, I think culminated to a point where I felt like I needed to create an experience just exhibiting more about my relationship with my own identity and how I am, or how I have been in the past, seen myself being represented in popular culture.
In the US, before the pandemic, there were huge protests from the Black community following the Black Lives Matter. Those protests decreased due to COVID-19 pandemic. Whereas during that same outbreak, it was reported in 45 states that East Asians have been spat on, punched, kicked, or even stabbed. So the highest rates were in the states of New York, California, and Texas. What do those attacks on colored people reveal about the American identity? Is it white versus any color person's racism?
Yeah, I definitely think that the racism just stems from really anyone who may or may not seem that they are different coming from any sort of other background where it's not only racism, it's people being xenophobic of cultures that are very much not a part of the American identity, where it's, you know, you are some foreign power who is, I don't know, threatening the US as the number one global power. So I think just from the pandemic and the fear that had been instilled, yes, I definitely blame Trump for just the way that he spoke about the pandemic and calling it, you know, Kung Flu, and always
making fun of it
and really just allowing the conversation to be so anti-China, or we should be all afraid of where China is going and just the power that they have. And I think a lot of that conversation, even pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic hit, and I think that just allowed people who maybe had some instilled racism and definitely xenophobic tendencies to act out in ways where they knew that now, you know, mm-hmm. they can get away with it. And it really has been like that, where it's definitely talked about now in media, maybe not as much as I would hope, but of these rise against, you know, AA and HPI community, especially or mostly against elders who are in these very much, you know, urban areas, where I am based in New York, and thinking that I'm living in a bubble where I am around such a diverse group of people, that you wouldn't necessarily think that there has been such plethora of attacks that have been happening. But I've definitely experienced that walking in my, you know, small bubble of this very gentrified neighborhood in Brooklyn, where I am consistently now a lot more cognizant of who is walking around me, or fearing just what may happen or come about if I am walking alone. And a lot of that, I think, just due to the pandemic and our government, and in addition to Black Lives Matter, where I feel like a lot of people who feel like their own identity as a white American coming from, I don't know, feeling like they're the group that is being threatened. And so they feel like, yeah, blaming other groups or other communities, acting out against other communities in ways that I did not entirely anticipate. And I know that that just came from my own privilege as an East American, you know, second generation immigrant who grew up here, who has been educated, where I know that I am part of a group that are deemed as the model minority. So a lot of my own experience with racism has been more on the end of microaggressions. And I think because now, from just the rise of attacks against Asian people, that now it's becoming a lot more
conscious.
Yes, conscious that it's not something that is a microaggression of people asking me where I'm from, but truly having more of, yes, repercussions that could be more so than me, you know, rolling my eyes and kind of just walking away because I'm so used to that type of behavior, instead of this type of, yeah, more violence and attacks against our community. So, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely a surprise in the past few years of just the fear, and it has been ongoing and not really much has been changed or improved.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit funny when you think that 300 years ago, most Americans were immigrants themselves, weren't they?
Well, yes, immigrants, but like colonists, and definitely, mm-hmm. yes.
Okay, let's go back to your VR exhibition. So Expo has different parts in this museum. And in the first corridor, we are entering your Walk of Fame, where you humorously depict how the Oriental community was depicted in movies. Having even white actors or any yellow faces fulfilling the job, a sort of racial profiling. If they look Chinese, they're Chinese. Of course, in the 50s, maybe there were no Asian actors, but it's still the case today because there are Korean actors who are endorsing Chinese people. For example, Ashley Park in Emily in Paris, Ken Jeong in The Hangover, and most of the crew of Crazy Rich Asian movie where there were different nationalities and they were all pretending being Chinese. So in your opinion, do Western people apply a different level of interracial group racism? Do you perceive different categories of exclusion depending on your origin?
Yes, definitely. And my project is focusing on the ways that the, you know, AANHPI community is being represented, but I am focusing on my own personal experience as a Korean American who is a part of East Asian culture that does tend to be a lot of the times what I personally feel that Americans or, you know, Western cultures deem as Asia, where if you hear, oh, this person is Asian, a lot of the times, or frequently more often than not, people assume that they are from an East Asian country. And East Asian meaning China. If I am walking on the street and people do ask me some type of, yes, racially biased in that microaggressions of, oh, do you speak Mandarin or where in China? It's always related to, you know, you clearly are not from here. You are from China. So that is usually, or they're saying ni hao or some other terms that are very much already identifying me as a, you know, Chinese person or Chinese American. And I just think with a lot of media where they are featuring some type of, you know, Asian American character, or they're casting Asian American actors and actresses in films, that they really are not going through the process of hiring people from. Right, where they are definitely hiring Korean actors for Chinese roles, or yes, Vietnamese people or Japanese people. I mean, it just seems like if you fit the look, then you are, and don't necessarily have to speak the language, although there have been times where you do actually have to speak some Chinese, and a lot of these actors that I have heard them being interviewed for definitely having to learn, and it is interesting, or people who come from those backgrounds and maybe just don't speak that language, because like I know I would definitely, though I am Korean, would need some assistance if I was taking on a role where I had to speak Korean or having to put on an accent or something where it is clearly different than your own identity and needing to fit that role. But you're being hired for that role and you're taking it because there's just unfortunately such a limited number of these roles available for Asian actors in the first place. So you really just have to kind of take what you can get. So it's not like I fault these actors for if they are Korean or Japanese or Vietnamese taking on a role that is Chinese, that is, or you know, another role that of another Asian descent, ethnicity that is not your own. My project is featuring how East Asian representation has been represented in Western media, because that is similar to my experience. And I know that South Asians who have or also face just being excluded from a lot of these roles and their own identities also being completely, you know, stereotyped and typecasted. But for this specific experience, it is featuring how East Asian actors and actresses and their roles have been exhibited and just communicated in pop culture in America.
Yes, well, I was very surprised because in 94 years of the Oscars award, there are rare Asian movies or actors that were recognized and won any prize, around 6 films and 4 actors in total. We can see an evolution of typical idealized Oriental stories such as The Last Emperor to a more modern focused storytelling like in 2020 Parasite, 2021 Nomadland, and possibly in 2022 Drive My Car. So there is a potential 3 years in a row Oriental winning movies, which is great. Despite a spate of Asian-led films in the recent years, the Academy has still failed to recognize their performers. Mm-hmm. Hopefully last year there were 2 nominations for Riz Ahmed and Steven Yeun for Minari. We had to wait until 2020 for the Academy to honor the second Asian actress Yung Yoo-jun in Minari. So how do you explain that change of heart?
Yeah, it's interesting how the Academy has really, really made so many improvements, at least what I feel like on their own will, of more recently how Parasite was nominated and won because I know that there were a lot of conversations of Parasite being nominated as the best foreign film rather than best film. I don't want to say historic, but yes, groundbreaking moment for the Academy to actually recognize Parasite and nominate Parasite and have them win. But then again, they didn't nominate any of the actors. And from that movie, which really carried that entire movie, and, you know, that's really great that, yeah, Steven Yeun and Minari was nominated. And those, and Steven Yeun, and he is a Korean-American actor. And I feel like maybe that is the reason why he was nominated as for maybe Best Actor. Whereas the other actors from Parasite, I guess, having not been born in America, that is why they feel like they can't actually include them in the nominations, which is so... People have been saying that there have been improvements. And I do believe that there have been, yes, some a slight awareness of how they at least need to be more inclusive. It's still what ends up winning more often than not, or at least the actors, or what is the most celebrated movies that are the most nominated are ones that are a lot of the times biopics, just really or movies that show America, yeah, focusing on the American identity, or how, I guess, not movies that are really seen as that popular, or they're really dramatized for reasons that I personally feel that not a lot of people can necessarily identify, resonate with, or I don't know, like movies like The King's Speech or something that it's just not, maybe it's not, in my opinion, telling us something that we don't maybe already know. But I do feel like there are a lot of movies, yes, like Nomadland or Parasite that are, I guess, just recognized and celebrated because they are just sharing different types of stories that maybe were not necessarily as widely accredited, or so it's just finally time to get more just new blood, I guess, voices, be more inclusive, and just be more dedicated to, I guess, like younger generations as well. New content that is sharing and exhibiting different types of voices and stories.
But there is maybe as well the problem, as the director of Parasite was saying, that if you pass the barrier of the subtitle, you discover incredible stories.
Right. Incredible stories, right. Yeah.
Thank you for your feedback. Can you tell us how you selected the actors you mentioned in your Walk of Fame?
So they were all of the, I mean, it was really hard to find Asian American actors who have been around in Hollywood for a long time, or some, I guess, new actors and actresses that definitely have a lot of films and just work under their belt more so than a lot of the other stars that do have their own, you know, star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Asian actors are the least represented, or the ones who have the least amount of, I guess, stars on this Walk of Fame. So what I decided to do in this experience is, as soon as when you walk into the museum and you're looking at all of these scenes that I recreated from pop culture films, all in, or the ones that I grew up with, so mostly like rom-coms, it wasn't really hard to find just Asian actors to put in the Walk of Fame, just because there really only have been a select few, 5, maybe 8 total of Asian stars who have their own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Like Lucy Liu only got hers recently. It was probably the first one that I knew, who I still know now. Like Sandra Oh doesn't have hers, and she's, I don't know how you can get better than Sandra Oh. So there's just a lot of still Asian celebrities who have just done a lot of work, who definitely have very strong voices and influence in Hollywood, who still are not, you know, celebrated in this way, or I guess deemed worthy enough in the Academy or Hollywood's eyes to have, yes, I guess, their own star on this historic Walk of Fame. So I just decided to recreate it in CG and just give each one of these actors their own star. So as soon as a user will enter into the museum, you'll be able to walk down this Walk of Fame of these actors.
Great. Otherwise, you have to wait like the famous hashtag OWA, old women artists. We can change it into old women actress.
Or old women. I mean, it's, yeah, I don't necessarily know about the the nomination process or the application process for the stars, or who are the ones selecting the celebrities to get their own star. But it really is just, yes, wild. I mean, even just gender-wise, there's a lot more men than there are women, and it's just mostly all, yeah, white men.
What is interesting is that in the recent adverts and films, we can see mixed couples. The portrayal goes mostly in one direction. The white guy with an Asian American woman, that is pretty rare to see the reverse, like a color man with a white woman. In your opinion, is it because Asian American women are still considered to be an exotic trophy girlfriend for the white male? Or because in movies, let's face it, Asian males are possibly not depicted as being strong or man enough or big lovers? It's always the white man with a color female partner.
Yeah, it's a whole world of fetishization that I feel is a reason why it tends to be with white male partners who are either have or in who are in interracial relationships, that the female identifying person in that partnership is the one who is of, you know, who is not white. And it could just be because our culture does tend to fetishize people from other cultures. These women are just fetishized for, you know, reasons because of how we have been represented in media, and they, I think, especially in the world of, you know, online dating and just dating apps, where a lot of the time I have been definitely fetishized or seen other, you know, white men's profiles looking for a certain type of woman. And it's definitely because they are, you know, fetishizing and objectifying a woman because of their, you know, body, where they're coming from, etc. And I definitely, that I'm sure a lot of women of color who are navigating the dating world, having to be very much aware of how they are being perceived in that relationship. And if they are just saying yes to me because of what I look like, rather than, I don't know, my personality that I'm trying to communicate through this dating profile. So I think just this culture of fetishizing women of color is something that has been going on for a very long time, and I'm sure is going to continue going on for a very long time. And I think a lot of that is due to the ways that we have been represented in popular culture. But yeah, there has been, you know, there's so many commercials and films that are featuring interracial couples, which is great. But I do think that the ways in which that they are casting these couples are, you know, shouldn't be something that's always, yes, the woman being of another race. And with the ways that Asian men have been more feminized in culture, I think it's also another reason why Asian men are rarely cast as the male romantic lead. I think like the first movie that I really have remembered or recognized is that movie that just came out, I feel like last year, with Henry Golding from Crazy Rich Asians, and
Emilia Clarke.
Yes. From what it seemed like, I did not watch this movie, but another Christmas rom-com that is great. But I also feel like, and this goes the same with, you know, with other minorities that are represented in media and pop culture, that it tends to be for a lot of Asian representation that they are biracial. And same with a lot of Black actors, there's definitely a sense of colorism. There's definitely a sense of like how Asian you can be, where that is something that is not necessarily prevalent in Western media, where it is Keanu Reeves. Like, he's an Asian actor, has played a lot of, you know, of those type of roles. And I'm like, yes, he is an Asian actor, but he also is white passing, or passing enough for that is that the American audiences are able to digest and understand, oh, of course he, you know, could be seen as a hot guy. Whereas, and I feel like that goes to the same with other minority to the sense of colorism, where it's like how much passing enough to be digestible or marketable towards a white audience. That you can't be too Asian, you can't be too dark skinned, you can't be too much of an accent, or it's just all of these still like, yes, it's improving, but not, I feel like, enough where it's still only to a point where maybe these Western audiences can still feel like that they want to see them still, on a big screen.
Let's continue our tour in your VR exhibition with the second and the third part that are much more personal. So, Leah, during your residency, we had a lot of opportunities to share our life experience and our banana pride. Of course, we share concomitant stories on how the colonial white gaze perceive us. And by us, I mean people who are referred to as foreigners in their home country and alienated possibly in their country of origin. So my question now is, how would you define your identity, Leah?
So I would feel like, had I have come to terms with this a lot earlier in my childhood, I'd probably have a better experience growing up in LA in this predominantly white neighborhood, if I just had a better sense of my own identity and relationship with being Korean. But I think that really only happened post-college, really, where I still felt, even in college, where I'm just meeting all of these new people and trying to, you know, still be either accepted in certain groups of people or trying to make myself seem, you know, like, oh, I listen to the same bands as you do, or I'm not, that we are that we can get along and it's not something where I feel clearly like I am so different or needing to prove that I can understand other people or where they're coming from or my humor's the same or that I feel like only more so recently in my adult years coming to the just security of me being a lot more just open to clearly I am Korean and this is something that I'm taking Korean language classes that I really want to be so much more a part of my identity. And I've been speaking with a lot of my other Korean friends about this, where, or that so often you were just the token Asian in the room. You know, you were like one of the few Asians that were assimilated into this group or culture, group of white people or other people that you didn't necessarily see as many other Korean Americans or other Asian Americans, befriend as many other Asian Americans who also grew up or experienced the same ways in relationship to their identity, where now I'm just surrounded by, or I'm friends with so many other Korean Americans, or I mean, mostly other Korean Americans who were all, you know, very much like, yeah, I had to be as white as possible growing up. And this is that we all have very, very similar experiences. We all like the same things, have similar upbringings with our parents being, you know, immigrants and coming from similar backgrounds. And we just feeling like I need to be so the opposite of what my parents are or what they think of me or who I should be. Where I'll be wearing, you know, clothes or listen to the same music or watch the same films, or especially within creative industries, where I am not only seen as somebody who, yes, is like the engineer, good at math, or the a lot more soft-spoken person, where clearly as soon as you meet me, I am not a person who maybe has necessarily, especially with new people, I think they tend to be a little bit surprised about how completely different that I may seem to the way that I look. And
yes, we always seem to be very prone to the appearances, right?
Right, right. So I think that part of my experience where I have, you know, this banana and this Twinkie included, that is kind of being showing how this museum is celebrating these types of identities, where I was called a Twinkie all the time, where I'm clearly yellow on the outside, where I can't hide my identity, but seeing white. So like acting like I am, you know, clearly not foreign, quote, or that you shouldn't, that I'm not one of those who you're xenophobic against because I grew up here, so I understand your culture. And that, for me growing up, where I was constantly called that, it affected me in different ways than it does now. Because now I see it as that was so wrong, and people can be, I am just as yellow on the inside, even though I, you know, that I grew up listening to certain, I don't know, folk artists or I don't know, rock and roll, or things that are traditionally, quote, American. I don't know. That is something that, yeah, I never really came to terms with until I grew older. Because it really was, yes, I am Korean, but I'm also American, and I grew up here, and I, you know, am educated, and I grew up with pop culture, and I know all of these things just like you do. But now it's like, oh yeah, I can still do all those things, but I'm still, you know, Korean. And now I hope that that isn't also, and this is what I have to definitely, you know, talk about in therapy all every all the time, which I do, where so much of what me coming to terms with in my own identity, I wonder of how much that is because of the way that our culture is directing itself towards now, in that we are becoming more open to other cultures, and the Korean media is also becoming a lot more, or is, you know, transcending to Western media, and people are becoming a lot more aware of all of these Korean films and K-pop and K-beauty, or just all the, you know, Korean skincare products and kawaii, and all of this stuff is becoming just a lot more popularized and accepted in American or just Western culture. That at a point I'm like, is this because, am I coming to these terms because also Americans are becoming more open to celebrating other cultures instead of, you know, typecasting it or otherizing it? So yeah. You know, it's a lot of things that I have to be thinking about or talking about my relationship with my own identity to myself, my other Korean friends, and also my therapist.
So for about a decade now, Korea has had the wind in its sails. K-pop, K-drama, as you mentioned, are widely popular and prevalent in contemporary culture, even in the West, as we said. In your opinion, what makes the K difference or the K success?
So one of the reasons why I named my project X-Pop was because I was referring to how a lot of other cultures seen by white media is always otherized as, you know, Latin pop or J-pop or K-pop. And in America, it's just pop, because this is more often than not to white Americans or Western people, Western media or white media is just seen as kind of the norm, and what, everything else is just something that is automatically different. And so it really has to differentiate. This K-pop is coming from Korea. It's not just like our idea of pop culture or pop music. K-pop, K-dramas, and K-beauty, I mean, everything is really just becoming, yes, like that culture or that country, and then whatever content or products are coming from that country, we're just gonna name it as that. And I think a lot of the reasons why, I don't know, there has just been such a uprise of Korean products and media. I mean, I genuinely think it's also because Koreans from Korea have this relationship with American media and culture of wanting to, through colonialism and just relationship with how South Korea has such a close relationship with the US, wanting to really market towards the US. So for Korean beauty products and for Korean art and for Korean movies and films, that I think the reason why a lot of this is becoming popular, and this is just only from my own experience and knowing how my parents and how when they talk about their idea of America and loving to be in America and feeling just the ways that I feel like a lot of Korean culture and of my times that I have gone to visit Korea, where so much of it is really catered or directed or marketed towards Americans, or at least people who speak English, that I feel like the ways that South Korea has really changed in regards to even development, American businesses and corporations that are in Korea, like they really are trying to formulate this really strong relationship. And I think trying to market a lot of their content, products, films towards American or white audiences. And I think a lot of that has succeeded for just Americans now becoming a lot more just at least aware, where you see so many of these Korean products at, you know, Sephora now, or movies being distributed by, you know, American companies and whatnot, that I think just because of this relationship between South Korea and the US influencing a lot of the mentality of Koreans who, yes, love the fact that Korean culture is being a lot more celebrated, where, you know, now it's all about like Korean fried chicken and your salad bar to go. It's like a bibimbap bar that are definitely owned by white people or made by white people. So I think just the ways in which Korean culture has translated to American pop culture is due because just the relationship and I think prevalence, especially growing up in California, in Los Angeles, in Koreatown, where before Koreatown was not a place that you really wanted to hang out in ever, at least when I was growing up, because it wasn't, I mean, at that point, Korean culture and Korean food, it was still something that hadn't really been as accepted or assimilated into white culture. So I didn't know any friends who lived in Koreatown. And now so many of my friends live in Koreatown. And this is just another place that is becoming a lot more gentrified and people are wanting to eat Korean food now. Whereas before they would always make fun of the fact that when they went over to my house, if we had a separate fridge for kimchi, because you always need a separate refrigerator that you keep all of your kimchi in, or my house would smell like kimchi and I would always be embarrassed to be bringing kimchi to and from class. And now this is just something that you see everywhere, or people, you know, my white friends have kimchi in their refrigerator here in Brooklyn. And it's something that I feel like because of South Korea and American relationships and just the ways that a lot of also Korean corporations are becoming a lot more, Samsung is really just everywhere. And like, it's just becoming a lot more interconnected. And I think that's just the reason why it's becoming a lot more accepted here to be watching a lot of K-dramas, or just a lot more accessible.
So as said, the K-power is trending, and even in the art world, one of the main sponsors in art and technology is Hyundai, notably with a collaboration with Bloomberg, Rhizome in New York, and major sponsors of cultural institutions, including the Tate Modern here in London. So are we witnessing the rise of the land of morning calm? What do you think about the announcement of the new edition of Free Seoul happening early September this year?
I mean, I think that is great that Korean artists, and especially in regards to contemporary or modern art, are becoming a lot more recognized and celebrated. I feel like in the past have seen, if you go to more fine art institutions like the Met here in New York, the Asian art quote section is kind of cast off to a smaller kind of gallery. The Korean art section is maybe half of a 12-foot by 12-foot space. It's not even a full New York apartment size bedroom. And it's all traditional folk art, that a lot of the times people will experience Asian art as your traditional folk art of either ceramic or mostly just, you know, either paintings of tigers or Korean women or your scrolls. So I think having the exposure of just the myriad, or just the pop, there's so many Korean artists working in contemporary modern emerging tech fields who are creating really great work, that South Korea or Seoul or just East Asian artists or just international artists are becoming a lot more recognized for their contemporary work that is current and speaking more currently about how maybe their identity or their country is contextualized in this, in a cultural context, rather than, oh, here is this one traditional painting by the Han Dynasty. Because again, a lot of the times that is what people really perceive as art from other cultures. So they really only know what
one or two things, maybe
one or two things that they see in glass displays in more of a historical or fine art context, or it's like, I don't know, a sword that they had, where that doesn't really reflect what current Koreans are experiencing now. I mean, I think that's great and interesting.
Have you been there?
Yes, definitely go. And when I have gone and seen the contemporary art museums there, they're amazing and featuring such wonderful artists that, yeah, I would love to see them also being exhibited here in the States. And I think it's becoming a lot more frequent that contemporary Asian artists are being recognized here in New York. MoMA, New Museum, or more of these institutions that are featuring modern art, but it's definitely still more work needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. And so finally, I would like to ask you, how do you see export project evolving?
Yeah, I have a lot of ideas in that I know that Xpop is something that is very personal to me, and also just a way that I can, that I could use as an outlet to really express my identity and my relationship to my identity and just how I navigate throughout the world. So I'm sure that as I am, as other aspects of the world globally and culture and everything is changing, that I will be either including more rooms or parts of the experience to maybe just share how I feel like the East Asian community has evolved in the eyes of Western media or whiteness or just in pop culture. And so a lot of it, maybe we will, it's kind of just seeing how this trajectory of diversity and an inclusion in Hollywood and people wanting to, or at least stating that they want to diversify their content and being open to exhibiting, new voices, even though that kind of has been a mindset or at least like 21st century in the past decade, and it's definitely made improvements, but still have a long way to go. So I know that I could see it evolving or me adding onto it, kind of just seeing how the ways in which we are being represented in media evolves. And this will be, an ongoing experience where it is something that is personal to me and my own experience as I am now, navigating my adulthood and seeing how just a lot of the younger generations are watching this content and consuming this content. And I definitely, as somebody who teaches and my students are all university students from 18 to 22 and kind of just seeing what content that they're consuming and their relationship with their own identity. And I teach a lot of international students or people who are coming from Asian countries and kind of just talking with them and hearing about their experience being here. And I know that I'm just, seeing how culture is really changing or how people are seeing themselves being representative. And I think just the ways that a lot of technology is also evolving is definitely changing our access to a lot of different content and other forms of media and other creators and voices. So I'm sure that that will have some impact as to how I talk about the ways that our communities are being represented in media and seeing how I can add that into this experience.
So more rooms to come.
Hopefully.
Thank you so much, Leah, for your time. I really invite you to visit your Pops Mozilla Xpop. It's really beautifully drawn. It was really a pleasure working with you for so many. Well, I'm very curious to discover, the continuity of the project. And then that's it, folks. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And on behalf of the Agora team, I'll see you the next time. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you, Mimi, so much. It's been very enlightening, and thank you.